Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
And boy, do I feel good. I guess it must be the time of the year, the summer months, and it's nice and warm. It just feels good to be outside and sometimes to be in the air conditioning or wherever you are. But it's just good to be alive at this time of the year. I hope you feel that way. We certainly do, and we're here as we always are here to make sure that from a financial literacy point of view, we have some of the answers that will make your home, your family, and your finances so much better in terms of the decisions that you make. We have some of the answers, and we're going to share them with you. Death and taxes. We all we're going to die, and that may not be such a happy subject, but it's true. And we also have to pay taxes, and we have to file taxes. And now, by now, you know whether or not you would have been audited. Maybe you were, maybe you were not. But my first guest is going to talk about how to accurately predict, I suspect, whether or not you might be audited and how you can improve your chances. And Kevin McCormley is going to join us to talk about that. And then in the second segment of our show today, we're going to be talking, you're forced to be a caregiver. And by the way, all of us at some point will be caregivers. So how do you approach that with your mom, your dad? How do you take their keys away? How do you tell them that they no longer can handle their finances? We've got certified financial planner Frank Jaffe, well known, is going to join us to give you some tips as to how to get through that and to do it in such a way that you don't end up creating the kind of ugliness that sometimes comes with that. But first and foremost, you may have heard that due to a cash-strapped IRS, audit rates are at their lowest level in a decade. In fact, more than 99% of individual income tax returns skate safely past the IRS audit machine, according to Kiplinger's, who's done some studies on that, specifically Kevin McCormley. But what are the odds that the IRS will audit your tax return? And what should you do if it does? And Kiplinger's editorial director, Kevin McCormley, will join us. He has some answers that I think get right to the point that will be helpful to you. Mr. McCormley joined Kiplinger back in 1977 as a reporter specializing in taxes, retirement, credit, and other personal financial issues. He is the author and editor of many books, and he is editorial director. He was named editorial director. So we're very pleased to have him, and it's not his first time with us. Kevin, thanks for joining us here on Home and Family Finance.
Paul, I'm really happy to be here.
This is
right about it being beautiful weather. And people should be happy to be alive and not worry too much about being audited.
Yeah, I know. At this point, I guess you know whether you were or were not by now, or is that?
No, Paul, you know, you don't, because right now they're still figuring out who's going to be audited on their 2013 returns. The 2014 returns that we filed in April, they're just starting to plug that data into the computers, and it might be another 6 or 8 months before you know whether that 2014. If you get a notice from the IRS in the next couple of weeks, it's probably 2013 they're looking at.
Really? So yeah. There's still a chance, even though you filed in the 15th of April, if you were on time, you could still get a notice that you're going to be audited.
Oh, absolutely. You probably would not. The first people will hear about 2014, I would think, in September, October, because it takes them a long, 140 million returns. They plug everything into these big computers out in West Virginia, and then the computers just start looking at everything and trying to figure out which of these returns are the most fertile ground to go after extra taxes on. And like you said, lowest level in a decade. The chance overall is 1 out of 116, so it's less than 1%. But if you don't file a business return or a farm return or claim the earned income credit, the chances of being audited are just 1 in 300. And, Paul, it's really easy to understand. Most of us, those of us who get paychecks, it's really hard for us to cheat because the IRS knows exactly how much we got paid.
Yeah.
So it's more unlikely that people just get paychecks and deduct the mortgage interest because they know exactly how much mortgage interest you pay. They know exactly how much state income taxes you pay because the mortgagers and the state income taxes, they get all this information. So it's easy to keep an eye on 90% of us. It's, 70% of us. It's the 30% who have some self-employment income or farm income. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones where there's an opportunity maybe to skate a little bit close to the edge, and therefore that's who they're going to look at.
Okay, so they're going to they're going to pinpoint those and say, okay, let's take a closer look. And I think that's one of the things that your calculator, and in case folks don't know, if you have a computer, Kiplinger offers you a way. They have a calculator that can be helpful. Talk to us about how and who's available, who can use this calculator. How does this work?
Okay, anybody can use it. It's really simple. It's at kiplinger.com. Just search audit calculator. And what we've done is we've gone through, we've plugged in the data we got from the IRS, and we ask you two questions. One, did you file a Schedule C with your return? And that's the business return, because the audit odds for people who file that return are much higher than the audit odds for people who don't. So we ask you, did you file that, yes or no? Then we say, what was your adjusted gross income? And whatever that is, plug it in. We'll tell you exactly what your odds are of being audited based on your income and the type of return you filed. Now, most people will see it's less than 1 in 100. Some people see it's 1 in 250. I mean, if you make a whole lot of money, it's more. You know, you make $1 million, it's more likely going to be audited because, again, as we were talking about, like Willie Sutton robbed banks because that's where the money was. IRS audits returns that they can get the most money out of.
Absolutely.
That's what we tell them to do.
Let me ask you, this is a question that's come up before, Kevin, and that is that if you're using an auditor, I mean a financial tax accountant or whatever, to do your taxes, and they have a great record with the IRS, are you less likely to be audited by using a firm like that?
I don't think you're less likely by using them, but you are more likely to be audited if you use somebody that the IRS is suspicious of. You know, there are some preparers out there who are known to the IRS to do phony returns. And, you know, everybody who goes in to see them gets an earned income credit because, you know, they plug these in. That's the biggest area of fraud in the government, taxes, is an earned income credit. So they keep an eye on these guys and they try to close them down. But if you go to somebody that they notice that, you know, 200 of their clients have been audited in the last 5 years, and it was profitable for the IRS to audit them, that name might put you on a list.
I got it. My guest is the great Kevin McCormley, Kiplinger's editorial director, and we're talking about the chances of you getting audited. When we come back, I'm going to ask him to tell us some of the red flags that you should know about, that you should avoid, and you've heard a couple of them already. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. We're very pleased to be with you. We'll be right back with more.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
Now, of course, pleased to be with you and pleased to have Kevin McCormley from Kiplinger with us. He is the editorial director, and we're talking about the chances of you being audited, tax audited by the IRS. Now, there is a calculator available to you at Kiplinger.com, and that can tell you what the likelihood is, or at least the chances are, according to Kevin. But he says that there are some red flags that you should know about. All right, I'm listening with my pen and paper. Kevin, go ahead.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to say, when I say red flag, I do not want anyone skipping a legitimate deduction if they deserve it, just because it might trigger an audit. Because if you've got the backup, you know, home office deductions, that's one that everybody says is a big red flag for an audit. And again, it's because the IRS knows that some people cheat on home office deductions, so they're going to look at that. There's a special form you have to file, so that's the red flag. But if you have a legitimate home office and you use it regularly and exclusively for your business, by God, take the deduction. They'll send you a letter. They'll say, prove it. You'll send in some documentation, and you'll keep your deduction. So that's the key thing. Don't skip anything because it's on this. Rental losses is one. Again, why is a rental loss a red flag for an audit? Because the IRS knows it's really easy to, you know, maybe boost that, some of those costs up a little bit to push the loss higher and save you more on taxes. It's, again, as we discussed earlier, is people have the opportunity to, you know, shade the truth a little bit. That's what the IRS is going to be looking at. Most of us don't have that opportunity. You know, a huge charitable deduction, you know, can sometimes trigger the IRS. You know, if you report that you made $50,000 income, but you gave $30,000 of it to charity, they're going to say, wait a minute, how did this person live during the year? You know, let's take a look at that. Let's get the proof. Again, if you've got the proof, if you've got the receipts, take that deduction. This is the kind of thing that they look at. Anything that's out of the ordinary, that computer we talked about out in West Virginia, it's looking at 140 million returns. It's trying to figure out whether or not the picture that you paint for yourself on that 1040 is sort sort of make sense with what other people are saying, or if it's way off. And if it's way off, they're going to contact you. Paul, another thing we point out in the story, we talk about 1 in 116 chances to get audited. 70% of audits are done by mail. You don't have to sit down face-to-face with an IRS agent. 1.2 million people will be audited this year. Only 300,000 of them actually have to go to an IRS office and sit down with an agent. The rest of them will get a letter that says, you know, dear Mr. McCormley, you know, we see that you reported, you know, $10,000 of mortgage interest deduction, but from the bank, we only got a 1099 saying you paid $5,000. Mm-hmm. What's going on? And if I can say, well, you should have gotten another one from the other bank that has my second mortgage.
Yeah,
I send that in. Everything is fine and dandy. If I can't, I'm going to be in trouble.
We're talking with Kevin McCormley, folks, from Kiplinger. And the thing that I think you hear from Kevin is this. These are people judging people. Now, they may use a computer to do it. So what would you be suspicious of? And that's what happens. There's nothing unusual. These are just people who are looking at behaviors and activities and saying, that seems a little bit strange, right?
That's right. And I tell you, I saw the head of the IRS, John Cascandian, the other day, and he was saying, no one person can decide to audit you. You know, people think, you know, there's a vendetta going on, you're going to get audited. First of all, 90% of the returns are audited because the computer is suspicious. But before anybody gets audited, a human being is going to look at that and say, does this make sense? And then another human being is going to have to agree with it. Not one person can decide somebody's going to get audited. So, you know, they really are playing the numbers, and this is the only way they can do it. You mentioned earlier that, you know, because of the cash-strapped IRS, they're doing fewer and fewer audits. You know, the IRS says, and I've never seen anybody dispute this, for every dollar they spend on enforcement, they collect $4 in taxes. So, you know, we really should be rooting for the IRS to be successful, because the more the bad guys pay in taxes, the less the honest taxpayers have to pay. So, I mean, I can't get on the bandwagon for people who hate the IRS. You know, they're doing a job. We pay them to do it. We tell them to do it. And they have to do it so we can pay for the government.
Kevin McCormley is my guest, folks. We're telling you how to make sure your best chances are with the IRS. And when we come back, what happens if you do get audited? He touched on that. Let's go for a little bit more information on how you should behave, what should happen, what will happen. You're listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. Listening to Home and Family Finance on Radio America. I am your host, Paul Berry, and we thank you for joining us. Our program sponsors are the Defense Credit Union Council, the DCUC, and also the Credit Union National Association, CUNA. We thank them for their continued support of this program dedicated to making all of us more financially fit, and that's where we want to be. Because then we can make the proper decisions. And the Defense Credit Union Council also cares about the military out there big time. And it has member credit unions. They believe that financial readiness equals mission readiness and supports the efforts of Military Saves and their dedication to improving the financial well-being of our troops. Military Saves is a year-round campaign that seeks to motivate, support, and encourage military families to save money, to reduce debt, and to build wealth. As part of the Department of Defense's financial readiness campaign, Military Saves acts as a resource center for information on financial education and counseling. Check out its links to useful websites for military families where they can learn better money management and can find partners who can help military members achieve their financial goals. Military Saves. Set a goal, make a plan, save automatically. Go to militarysaves.org for more information and take the Savers Pledge today. It will make a positive difference in your life. I promise, folks, if you do it. So you got to get that done. Okay? We're talking with Kevin McCormley. He is a specialist in many things. And primarily, he is the man who has recently put an article out through Kiplinger's on the tax calculator. And it talks about the chances of you being audited and how you can improve your chances by, as he said, not skipping, but making sure you do the proper things. And then when your numbers come up on the computer, they don't look shaky, Kevin. And if they look shaky, you're going to get audited. And how many audits were actually done last year or this year, I guess it is?
Well, in 2014, they did about the 1.2 million audits of individual returns, and about 300,000 of those were face-to-face. The rest of them were just done by mail. So about 1.2 million a year get audited.
Okay. All right. Well, let's assume that I don't, because so many of us don't get on it, but if I do, what to do? What do I do if I'm one of those, I guess, unlucky ones for you to be audited?
Well, first of all, you'll get a letter from the IRS. You know, you're not going to get a phone call from them. You're not going to get an email from them. You get a letter or snail mail letter. And the first thing to do is don't panic. If your records are in order, you're safe. You know, if you got, you'll be given at least a couple, 3 weeks to get your records in order. You know, if you've lost a return or something, they'll send you a copy of the return if you ask for it. If, you know, you've lost a bank record, get in touch with your bank, put your records together. You know, we say the first thing you do is audit yourself. You know, they're going to tell you in this letter what they're looking at. They're not going to look at everything. They're going to say, we're going to look at your home office deduction. We're going to look at your rental deduction. Get your records out and, you know, go through them very carefully. Now, the other thing, my favorite thing that I ever heard from an auditor, and this is a guy who actually audited my father one time, and I just came across him years later as a reporter, and I said, what is it you want to see in an audit? And he said, Kevin, I want to see what you were looking at when you wrote that number on your return. You had to have some reason to write that number down. Show me what you were looking at. And I think that's what you've got to find. You can't make stuff up here, right? So if you got those records, you know, that's what you do. You don't have to go. If you're afraid you're going to, you know, get scared by the auditor and just cave and give in to anything, hire somebody to go for you. That's fine. You give me your power of attorney. If you paid somebody to do your return, talk to them. Maybe they'll go. You know, whether or not they go or not really depends on how much they're going to cost you and how much money is at stake. But don't panic. Once you get into the room with the auditor, if you're one of those 300,000 assets, go face-to-face, don't chat them up, because these people are smart. They're stars at this. You know, we talk about people who say, you know, somebody who complains about, problems with my kid, he dropped out of college. That could cost you a dependency exemption. You know, just answer their question honestly.
Right. You're not, they know what you're doing. They're not, you know, as I said, these are people, folks, just like you. Think of you as the auditor. What are you looking for? You know what's going on. And that's so important. But let me ask you this, Kevin. And we're talking with Kevin McCormery from Kiplinger. He's Kiplinger editorial director. There is a calculator, and we'll have him mention that again before we close here with him. You make a mistake, you make it intentionally or unintentionally, but it's a mistake. Do you come clean and just say, sorry, and get it straightened out? I mean, that's probably the better way to do it, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you've got to be careful. You know, I think you just want to answer the questions and say, you know, why did you claim this, you know, $20,000 loss on your rental property? And you say, well, look, here's where I added up the numbers, and I noticed that, you know, you're absolutely right. I it's $2,000 more than I should have claimed.
Right.
You know, own that up, because they're going to be adding those numbers as well. So I think, yeah, you want to be honest, because, again, you know, you probably didn't commit fraud. I mean, very few people do that. If it's an honest mistake, they're going to charge you the tax. They're going to charge you interest on it, because the law says they have to. Whether or not you get hit with a negligence penalty, that's up in the air. And one other statistic that we've got in our story that goes along with the calculator is you don't have to agree with the auditor. Last year, 35,000 people disagreed with the auditors on over $14 billion. You can appeal this. You can appeal it inside the IRS, and you can go to court. You don't have to give in.
Kevin, thank you so much. Coming up next, how do you get mom and dad to give it up?
Helping you be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
Does the term caregiver mean anything to you yet? The fact of the matter is, all of us are likely at some point in our lives to become caregivers, whether you choose to or not. And I know that from a personal situation with my mother. My mother is now 93 years old. And has been independent all of her life, has driven all of her life, has her own bank accounts, has traveled, and has been so independent. And now at 93, Alzheimer's, there's a hint of that. There's a hint of a number of things that that mean that she needs help. And it's not help that she wants. It's help that we have to give to her. As a matter of fact, about 10 million Americans are 80 and older. One of the fastest growing age groups. They collectively hold trillions of, I didn't say millions, trillions with a T, trillions of dollars in wealth. What is disconcerting is that research shows that about half of these people, that would be 5 million people, either have dementia or at least some cognitive impairment, folks. That's a stunning number. And what is particularly troubling is that in many cases, these people are left to manage their own finances. That, according to Frank Jaffe, certified financial planner. with a wealth management firm of Access Wealth Planning in New Jersey. Frank is joining us now to talk about this. And Frank, thanks first of all, thanks for being on the program. This is such an important topic.
Well, thanks a lot for having me, Paul. I guess we can share experiences to a certain extent because my mother is turning 86 next week, and while she's a few years behind your mother, she's also been independent her whole life. And, you know, we've gone through various transitions over the last few years. And, you know, that firsthand experience is a great teacher, and as well as, you know, dealing with my clients over the years as they've aged. So I'm learning as I go, and it's quite an experience.
It really is an experience. I mean, you look at them. First of all, you've got to decide that there are signs that tell you that their help is needed. And let's talk about some of those signs. What are some of the signs that it might be time to step in?
In most cases, nobody rings a bell and says, okay, now a dementia has settled in, although apparently that happens occasionally. Some of the signs can be subtle, and so whether one is an advisor such as myself or a family member, I think one has to be sensitive to some of the early warning signals. That may include diminished capacity in terms of mathematical computation. Mm-hmm. If you get a sense that your mother or your aunt or whoever you're dealing with is having trouble putting numbers together, that might be a sign that although she or he may not have Alzheimer's or a condition that can be even diagnosed by her physician, there may be a certain amount of diminished capacity that could result in mistaken computations, mm-hmm. confusion, adding or subtracting a zero to a formula, and that's one sign that I would look for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in that vein, folks, and again, I think Frank and I both can talk to you from personal experience. If what your relative, whoever they may be, if you see them re-looking at papers, for instance, things that they've done before and they go over and over again and they never come to a conclusion, or they can't remember what they said to you and whether or not they wrote that checkout, there are subtle signs, and Frank, you're right. They may not be diagnosable, but they are. Something is happening, right?
Yeah, and the reality of life is such that, and I don't care, again, if you're an advisor or a family member, it's a little bit uncomfortable when this gray area is detected for somebody to intervene and say, you know, Mom, I think maybe we have to revisit this situation. Maybe we need some kind of checks and balances. So the path of least resistance is to just pretend everything's okay, and that type of passivity is what really could lead to problems down the road. And the more that it goes on, we don't know what's happening behind the scenes. So I would suggest a proactive approach with sensitivity to really intervene in a smart way to make sure that everything is functioning properly.
And by the way, folks, the reactions can be chilling from those you love because they sometimes they question your motives. Why are you doing that? Why are you now wanting to handle my money? Why can't I drive where I want to? And Frank, it's not always just the person that you're dealing with. Sometimes it's relatives, it's brothers and sisters, other folks who can question you as well. I mean, it really is a very complicated issue.
I think it's important to try to get the team members together to discuss and to come up with some type of an approach to the elderly person. Those team members could be an advisor, could be an accountant, or various family members. Oftentimes, there's one child, perhaps, that has a certain communication skill with a parent that mm-hmm. can figure out a way to approach the subject without starting World War III. So, you know, the human factor is critical here to make inroads, and especially when it comes to driving. Obviously, then we don't want this person to become to become a weapon of mass destruction. So, it's extremely important. But financially as well, we find that people can be taken advantage of, and that can lead to all kinds of problems.
That's right. That's right. Folks, again, personal experience, we had to pull the battery cable off of the car to stop my mother from driving it. She had keys, Frank, and she would, you know, and then when we did that, then we were accused of doing exactly what we did. Now, do you lie about it or do you say yes because, and that's what we said, yeah, we did because you won't stop driving. My guest is Frank Jaffe. He is a certified financial planner, folks, and we're talking about the issue of your senior, somebody that you love dearly. You don't want to hurt them, but you only want to look out for them, and they misunderstand what your purpose and your motives are. What do you do about that? When we come back, we'll ask Frank to tell us certain safeguards that can be in place that can make a positive difference in that relationship. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
We're talking with Frank Jaffe, a certified financial planner with the wealth management firm of Access Wealth Planning in New Jersey. And we're talking about what you're going to do when your loved one, your senior mom, your mom or dad, or senior member of the family needs help, and then they resent your intrusion. And family members who don't, as you say, Frank, live on the ground floor, are not there every day, they don't know what's going on, and so they sometimes misinterpret what your motives are.
Whether it's a family member, an advisor, that actually has regular contact with this person to really know what their mental state is on a current basis, because I was pointing out that I have a couple siblings that live, you know, thousands of miles away. Their conception of my mother is, you know, when they last spoke to her a couple of years ago in her best state.
So, how she was, not how she is.
How she was and not how she is, and it's a constantly a moving process. So some of the things that we've advised clients to do are to set up some types of checks and balances that we want the senior citizen to retain as much as independence as possible. Mm-hmm. And cognitively, that's still a positive experience for them and important for them to be able to use their brain to accomplish tasks that may still be somewhat difficult, such as balancing a checkbook, paying bills, and so on. But a first step may be to get online account access where a relative or perhaps a professional can audit the process to see that some mistake is not occurring or mm-hmm. that checks are not going to the wrong people. You know, recently, one of my clients, who is a baby boomer and still very much aware, was alerted to the fact that her mother, who is in her late 80s, has a very trusted advisor that called my client, who's the senior citizen's daughter, mm-hmm. and said, yeah, we're a little bit short on this life insurance policy. We need you to write a check for $45,000. And it was like, what? Life insurance? $45,000? And that uncovered a whole dubious process that had been set in motion years ago. So mm-hmm. while we can't be overly skeptical, and most professionals are honest, I would like to invoke the words of Ronald Reagan. President Reagan has said, trust but verify.
Yes.
So we need some kind of a verification process because we don't want to be the odd man out that's a victim.
What about a power of attorney? Is that something good that we should have? Or?
So power of attorney is a key document, and that allows a third party, whether a family member or a professional, to act on behalf of the grantor of the power, in this case, presumably a senior citizen, mm-hmm. and that can be set up in one of two ways. A durable power of attorney is sort of a carte blanche that says, my daughter can act on my behalf to sign a check, to withdraw money from the IRA, and so forth, without any preconditions. That might be viable when there's a totally trusted family member,
mm-hmm.
and that, in case of incapacity or diminished capacity, that allows somebody to step in without invoking the courts to get involved. A second flavor which could be used is a limited power of attorney or a springing power of attorney, which says if a doctor or two doctors give write a letter that the senior citizen or whomever it is not capable, then these people can jump in and handle financial matters on his or her behalf.
Right. But that takes planning. I mean, what you're really saying is you've got to think about this. You've got to plan this. You've got to get family members involved. You've got to get attorneys involved if necessary, doctors involved. You've got to plan how you're going to deal with this. You just can't expect one day that you're going to be able to handle this.
Right. The great problem in life is that when everything's going smoothly, we don't want to do anything. And yet, once problems occur, then it may be too late. So we want to jump in while things preferably are going well and be proactive. And some of the technical details are daunting too. And in terms of the power of attorney, although theoretically one power of attorney could be applicable to any institution, many times a bank or a brokerage firm wants to have their own power of attorney signed. So I would go a step further. Once I have a power of attorney signed and drafted by an attorney, I would go to each institution and say, would you honor this power of attorney if and when it comes to play?
Mm-hmm. These are things that you should do, folks. Simple as that. Get things squared away. And again, getting into the bank account or taking the car away, taking the money away, and they are difficult to do because your loved one may not understand this, and they see it as something that's that you're doing to enrich yourself, and then all of a sudden you've got a big problem going on. Frank, I guess the part of the best way to do this, as you say, is through the conversation, is to get everybody on board, get everybody involved, and try to do this when your loved one is as sensible as they can possibly be.
It pays to be proactive and to take the first step. Another possible pitfall that can confuse people as they get older is the amount of clutter in their lives. You know, we have complicated lives at best. We get so many bills every month. We have so many financial institutions. I find a lot of times that these senior citizens have different financial positions, each of which may be relatively small, and they may own, they may have a stock certificate where they own 50 shares of AT&T from a million years ago, but they're still getting statements, they're still getting a dividend, they're still getting endless paperwork, and consolidation can simplify their lives to a great degree. And people have a hard time differentiating between the importance of 50 shares of AT&T and $500,000 in an IRA. So as much as possible, simplify, consolidate.
Okay. My guest, Frank Jaffe, coming up, we'll kind of summarize this for you and find out if there are organizations out there that can help, and ask Frank what he thinks, how we should approach that as well. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. My guest today is Frank Jaffe, and we're talking with this certified financial planner who's advising you on how best to intercede with your aging relative, with your senior citizen that now obviously needs help. But we want you to recognize so vividly that that just opens up, Frank, a host of other problems out there. With other people, with your brothers, your sisters, with the minister. You know, my mom went to the church to say that, you know, we were trying to take her bank account away, and now you've got Reverend so-and-so who is worried about getting his weekly pay. I mean, there's so many things that come into this. So if you're in this situation, should we come to someone like you, to a financial planner, or are there organizations out there that are set up to help, Frank?
Well, I would recommend perhaps a bit self-serving, but a certified financial planner can be sort of a quarterback to bring everything together with a good team, using your attorney and using your accountant as well as part of the team. And I would look for somebody who is not merely a numbers cruncher, which is certainly an important aspect of the job, but in the personal financial planning department, I want to emphasize the personal part of it, could be at times 70 to 80% of it, because we're dealing with human beings, we're dealing with the psychology and the emotions of bringing somebody's life together and really trying to address quality of life issues for a senior citizen, for the children, and perhaps for generations to come. So it's important that we address these issues. It's part of life, and if we realize it, it can be a positive experience for everybody.
Yeah, that's so important, Sam. You're right. If you go about this the right way, even with the misunderstanding that sometimes is involved, and I found from my mom, everybody else knew what my intent was, my sisters. And so when the issue came down, there were folks who were included in the plan, family members who, when mom called them to complain, they said, "Oh, come on, you know better than that." I mean, it was very supportive. We get the kind of supportive reactions that kept her in line as long as we could, but this is something that that many folks face. It we're 10 million Americans, and we're talking about trillions of dollars. If somebody wants to reach out to you, or can they reach to? Do you have a website where they can go for more information?
Yeah, for more information, they can look for me, Frank Jaffe. At our website is www.awplan.com, as in Access Wealth Planning.
The other thing that we should point out, too, that it doesn't – sometimes it's not about old folks. It's about people that lose their capacity for a variety of reasons. I think that's another important element here. Not all of the people that will have – that need help that are our seniors are necessarily old. Sometimes they just they have health issues, and there again – I think what you're saying is make sure you have doctors involved and others who can be of assistance.
Absolutely. Mental and cognitive impairment can strike at any age.
Yeah, and folks, what you don't want to do is, if you can avoid the fight, and that's what we're talking about, Frank, in many ways, you can do it. And I think that goes back to another issue that I'd just like you to talk very quickly about is do it now. Sit down with your parent when they're absolutely sane and have all of their memories and all of their attitudes are in place, and start the process early. That doesn't hurt at all, does it?
We're all procrastinators by nature. And there's always something more exciting to do than sit down and have the talk. But if one sees this as a quality of life issue, that you're protecting a parent, and not to be overly paternalistic, but you're looking out for their quality of life, for your quality of life, and all the loved ones around them, then it's really should be a motivating factor. And don't be afraid. Take the first step.
Yeah, that's the important part again, taking that first step. Notice that there's a problem. Say, okay, we're going to get this together and get the family and folks gathered around. Get all these elements that Frank has talked about, the doctors, the accountants, everybody, and start to and go through it and open up the dialogue, even though it's difficult to do. Frank, it's a pleasure having you on the show today to talk about this. This is an issue that folks, we kind of like, we let slide, but we can't. We have to grab hold of it and do something about it. Thanks for joining us here on Home and Family Finance. Okay, it was a pleasure. Frank Jaffe, my guest, folks. Listen, if this comes up in your family, as you heard him say, don't just slough it off and don't try to pass it off. Take a hold of the situation, because it's not going to get any better. It's only going to get worse, I assure you. We're glad to have you with us today. Thanks for coming back. Al Peterson, thank you so much for your work in there, our engineer, and to all of our guests, thanks for joining us here on Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.